Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. Today's episode is a listener request, so I'm going to be talking about integrating back into life as you navigate your chronic illness, chronic fatigue journey. The idea for this episode was crowdsourced through Instagram. I put a little notification on my stories this morning saying, I'm looking for podcast episode ideas. Does anybody have any suggestions? And somebody answered and said, can you do a podcast on integrating back into life on your recovery journey? And I followed that up with a message just to get a little bit more background information. So today I will be elaborating on that topic, talking a little bit more about just living life while you are recovering, attempting to live normally, if that's even possible, with fatigue, looking at how we navigate others or other people as we're working on our recovery. How do we manage expectations? How do we work on relating to others in our fatigue recovery journey? Building the confidence to get back into life, work, families, relationships, all those things that we've probably withdrawn from for a period of time while working on our health. And then also learning not to go back into our old lives that perhaps caused us to be unwell in the first place, but to live life at a little bit of a slower pace. So before we dive into the episode, just as always to ask, if you haven't already left a review for the podcast, I would really appreciate it if you could take a moment and pause the episode, give me 5 stars on Spotify or iTunes, and then move on with your day. It will take you literally 10, 20 seconds to do, but it will make a real big difference to me because your reviews help to improve the podcast ratings. That helps other people find the episodes and get the help that they have been looking for, perhaps receive some information that could really, really help them and change the trajectory of their day or their illness as a whole. So if you haven't already done that, I would love to ask you to do that now. And then let's go into the episode. So I'd love to start this episode by talking about living life while recovering. And this is a dilemma that I often hear clients reflect on. You know, they're doing all the things. They obviously have a limited capacity. They don't feel very well. And then very often the capacity that they do have is being spent on medical appointments, meal prep, maybe, you know, other healing practices like sauna or meditation or hours doing brain retraining or whatever else that they have to do in their lives, just maybe perhaps even to just function day to day, like personal care and showering and washing hair and looking after pets or family members. Then they're healing. And then it doesn't leave a lot for actually living. And this can be a real dilemma because then we just almost feel like, well, what's the point? Because we don't have any resources left to really enjoy the process. And if you've heard me talk about this on various episodes in different ways, you may have heard me say in the past that life is happening now. And we can't always be looking ahead to the future, waiting for that moment when we can enjoy life, because now we've done enough work on ourselves to build enough capacity to be able to do some of the things we enjoy. We want to find ways that we can enjoy our life now, in the moment, even if the time and energy and capacity for that is only teeny, teeny, tiny to begin with. We almost want that just little seed of life force, of life energy and life flow that we can nourish and grow and cultivate over time. So how do we kind of connect with that and how do we get a sense of what that actually means for us? Well, I'm currently reading a book called The Well-Lived Life, And the author is Dr. Gladys McGarry. So if you want to read the book, I'd highly recommend it. She is 102 years old, and the book is really about her sort of personal reflections on what it means to live life well, but also what it means to be healthy. And she was a medical doctor herself, born and raised in India. So she kind of combines Eastern medicine with Western medicine, and she's created this book. And even though I haven't finished the book completely yet, I think I'm about halfway through, and there's just some really, really beautiful concepts that she shares that I resonate with so much. And one of the things she talks about in the book is that we need to be able to connect with our life force. And I feel like my chronic fatigue journey was a journey of reconnecting with my life force. And this was hugely facilitated by learning somatic experiencing, by doing a 3-year training in somatic experiencing, and then obviously practicing it through my own therapy sessions, but in my own way, you know, every single day, as I teach many of my clients to do. And, you know, that life force energy was always there. It was always inside of me, but I wasn't always as attuned to it as what I am now. And I wasn't always as connected to it as I am now. And this was something that I acknowledged in my journey that was really necessary for me. I really wanted to feel a sense of aliveness in my body. And that can be a really big request for somebody who feels, quite frankly, absolutely awful. For somebody who feels like they're, you know, 80 years old instead of 28 years old. But we want to start to look for where that life force, where that sense of aliveness is in our life. And Dr. Gladys, in the book, she talks about this idea of a river. So a river is flowing, and when it flows, that life force energy is flowing through the river. But if a tree or a rock or something falls across the river and in a forest, say, there might start to be a buildup. There's a sense of stuckness of that flow of water. There's a stuckness and stagnant, a pool of water will develop. But life keeps on moving. Life keeps on flowing. And that river, even though there's maybe a tree or rock which is blocking its path, yes, the water is going to build a bit of a dam, but eventually, because the flow of water is continuous, there's going to start to be little bits that trickle over the edges, and there's always going to be little bits that trickle through. And that's what we want to look for in our fatigue recovery journey, is we want to look for, where are the trickles of my life force that I can connect to? And for me, and I've said this in different ways in the podcast, but for me, it's this idea of, how do we resource ourselves? And what are the things in our life that allow us to feel that life force energy? And it could be the connection you have with the people in your life. It could be cuddling your cats. It could be the sunshine on your face in the summer. It could be the fresh air that, you know, if you can only just manage, you know, 2-minute walk around the block, but you can see the trees and you can feel the sun on your face and you can feel the wind in your hair. There is a connection to life. And it could be something completely different for you. Maybe you're a very creative person. Maybe you create artwork, or you knit, or you sew, or there's other things that in your life that really light you up from the inside out and give you that sense of aliveness. Those things should be the things that we engage with as part of our healing journey. And we need to make space for it. Yes, we need to make space for our healthcare practices like meditation or food prep, or we also need to make space for the things that we have to do, unfortunately, as part of our responsibilities in life, like personal hygiene and self-care and maybe family responsibilities or work responsibilities. But we must make sure that we don't lose sight of our connection to our life force as we work on our healing journey. Because if we're focusing on healing and we're not connecting to our life force, then what are we healing for? So that is a question I will leave you to reflect on, but maybe just thinking about how you can engage with life now and not be waiting until there is more energy before you engage. Engaging with the life force is how we facilitate our recovery. And that kind of links with the next thing, which is living, and I put this in air quotes, normally with fatigue. Because it's obviously, there's no perfect way to live normally when you have fatigue. But we also need to ask the question, is normal actually healthy? And is normal actually desirable? Because we're living in a world today where the environment we live in is sick. There's toxic cultural beliefs, shall we say, about productivity, what makes someone valuable. You know, there's, I guess, stigma about rest or what we should achieve and when we should achieve it by in our lives. There's so many, I guess, benchmarks or belief systems or rules about how things, in air quotes, should be, that we maybe haven't taken the time to question. And so when we think about living normally, I would first suggest that you take a moment to reflect on what that actually means to you. What does normal mean to you? And then does normal align with what you need as a human being to thrive and be in connection with the flow of life and the flow of your life force? Does normal, or does that version of normal, align with your values? Does it align with your passions? Does it align with your purpose on this planet? And maybe there's even an invitation here to create your own version of what normal is. What is normal for you so that you can meet your needs? What is normal for you so that you can be aligned with your values? What is normal so that you can have passion and joy and purpose in your life? And then compare that to what we often believe normal should be based on society's idea of what normal is. And then there's going to also be a part of you that will have to accept that there are limitations. As you progress in your journey, the hope and wish is that those limitations will become less and less. There will be more capacity, and therefore there'll be more opportunities or different ways in which you can meet your needs, align with your values, and follow your passion and purpose. But just because you have limitations now, or your limitations are smaller now, it doesn't mean you can't meet your needs, align your values, and follow your passion and purpose. You just have less options in which to do so. But there are still ways that you can do it. And this is really a journey of connecting to self. And that is the journey of healing. I always say that the journey to healing is learning about, is attuning to ourselves and really connecting with ourselves, that life force energy, and starting to understand what it is that we need in our lives to thrive, and not losing sight of that as we follow the healing protocols or whatever it is that we have to do. But it's really about what matters to you. And with acceptance of the limitations you have in this moment, and the hope that those limitations will change over time, but with the acceptance of where you are now, how can you align your life with what matters most? And then the other part of this is that there, because there are limitations, there will also be loss. Loss of what is possible now, and therefore we need to allow also space for grief. Grief is such an important emotion, which is obviously made up of many different emotions, that we need to really start to get comfortable with, not only for our healing journeys, but for life. Because in your life, there are going to be many, many times where you will be faced with grief. And if you can really become intimate with grief and accepting of grief, it will just make your life so much easier to navigate and really support you in your own emotional regulation and with the capacity of your nervous system. So when we're looking at living normally with fatigue, it's really about knowing yourself, knowing what matters to you, accepting the current place that you are in your journey, and also allowing and having practices which allow you to grieve what isn't possible right now, but maybe possible in the future. And obviously some things may be lost forever, and there has to be some sort of way that we can't reconcile that within ourselves and find a way to accept that. And so then moving on to something else, which is also connected, which is managing others' expectations. And then this was actually a separate question which came in, but I'm going to weave it in here, which is how we relate to others in our journey. If I was to give this a top line answer, what I would say is you must be clear on you. So going back to the previous question, what matters? What are your needs? What are your values? What drives you? How do you connect to your life force? Where is your passion? Where is your purpose? And once we are really clear on ourselves, it becomes so much easier for us to relate to others authentically and in a healthy way. So here, the other piece of this puzzle is that we have to accept when you have had a chronic illness experience, it's really difficult for other people to understand what that's like unless they have experienced something similar themselves, or maybe not something as, you know, profound as perhaps a chronic illness, or I mean, I don't want to say as profound as, but maybe something not in the same category, shall we say, as a chronic illness, but they've had a really big life-changing event. They've had a really big loss. They've had some, you know, really, really difficult things happen to them in their lives that they've managed to overcome. Those types of people, even if they haven't necessarily had a chronic illness experience, are going to be much more likely to understand your experience, because we can only meet people at the depth that we are willing to meet ourselves. And when somebody goes through something very challenging, which forces them to dig deep and really confront themselves and come out stronger, they will have that in their nervous system, that learned experience in their nervous system. And from that place, they'll probably be able to relate to you. And so I think there's going to be people in your life that will be really compassionate, really empathetic, really understanding, and really be able to hold the space for what you're going through. And then there'll be other people where they just, it just doesn't resonate. It's just overwhelming. They haven't had the opportunity because of their life experiences to go as deep into themselves as you are having to go into yourself as you navigate this experience. And you just have to pick your battles sometimes. So we want to be able to relate to others, but we have to accept that our experience is very hard to relate to. So pour your energy into those people who you know can relate to you best, or you know have the capacity to really be with you on this emotional experience that you're having. And for those people who maybe aren't going to get it in the way that you would like them to get it, that's really an opportunity for you just to do your best to communicate authentically. And here it's where it's really helpful just to assume that other people, they don't get it. They don't understand, and you have to spell it out for them. So I think in part of this question, there was an example of my friends think now because I can meet them for lunch that I'm fully healed or I'm fully recovered now, but that's not the case. So it might actually be the authentic communication around, yes, I would love to meet you for lunch. Just so you know, like a 90-minute lunch date actually takes up 4.5 to 5 hours of my time because I need to rest for 90 minutes before and 90 minutes after. So I would love to meet you for lunch, but I just want you to understand that it's a really big deal for me. So it's really kind of painting the picture of what your experience is and communicating that in a way that you're not asking them for pity. You're not asking them to feel sorry for you. You're not asking them to necessarily adjust the plans. You're just asking them to to really see that when I'm giving you an hour of my time, I'm actually giving you 4 hours of my time. When I make a plan to see you on the weekend, that's the only commitment I can have for the whole weekend. So our 2-hour meetup on a Saturday is actually my entire weekend that I'm giving to you. And I think if you can start to really explain to people what it takes for you to show up in the way that you show up, they'll hopefully start to become a little bit more understanding about your situation and where you're at. And it might even be, you know, I'm just throwing some examples out here into the ether, which is it might also just be something like, you know, I'm fine to meet for lunch, but I get very overstimulated in noisy restaurants. Could we meet somewhere quiet where we could sit outside? That means I can have more energy to focus on our conversation and I won't feel as drained by the noise in the background. So that's another example. Well, obviously, foods are a really important thing. So communicating what you need from a food perspective, if you have special dietary requirements. And so it might be a case of if somebody wants to serve you, like a pasta dish for lunch, say. And you could say, I really appreciate the fact that you want to have lunch with me, just so that you know, when I eat these types of foods, I experience these types of symptoms, and then that can knock my energy levels back for several days. So me eating that meal, as much as I appreciate the fact that you would make it for me, would mean that I'm not then able to do these other things that I want to do for the next 3 days. These are the foods that I eat, list them out, or these are the foods I don't eat, list them out, and then explain, if this feels too much for you, I'll happily just meet up and come for tea, or I'll meet up and bring my own packed food. So just being really clear on you, but just understanding that people are not going to get it. So if you're looking to manage expectations, you have to be really clear of, you know, what it is that you can and can't do, but also spelling out the consequences. So because I'm doing this, the consequences are X, Y, Z, and that means for me, P, Q, R, so that people can really get it. And if you're looking to relating to others, it's important that you relate to them, your experience, invite them into your world, help them to see what's going on for you more clearly, because unless someone has had an experience like this, they're not going to get it. And there will be people for whom this is too much. There will be people who just cannot get it. As even if you are an excellent communicator and you really spell things out, they're just not going to be available for it because of whatever is going on with them. And that's not a reflection on you, but that is also the reality of the situation. And then you get to choose, how much more time and energy do I invest in this person, this relationship? Or could I take that time and energy and put it back into my life force and the things that are important to me, or other relationships that are more supportive and more nourishing on this journey? So I guess the bottom and the top line here are that you need to be clear on you. And once you're clear on you, you can communicate that authentically. And you are also in a position where you can set boundaries. What is okay? What is not okay? What are your limitations? Where do things begin and where do things end? And if those boundaries are crossed, what is the impact that it has on you? And if you can communicate all those things in a really genuine, open-hearted way, you probably find that people will start to understand you better. You may even find that you have more support, more people looking out for you, more people rallying around you to support you and to support your needs. The reason why I can speak about all of this stuff is because I did it terribly. I didn't do any of these things when I was ill, and it constantly left me in cycles of boom and bust. And it was learning to do these things that were a huge part of my own recovery journey as well. So then moving on to the final two pieces, the next piece is building confidence and getting back to life, whether that is work life or families or relationships or anything else that's going on for life in life. How do we build confidence? And here I'll say that the fear is real. You know, we want to do these things. We want to expand our capacity. We want to engage more with life and the flow of life and connect more with our life force. But it's scary, because if you've been through an experience where you've had post-exertional malaise or you're not sure what the body can and cannot handle, there's always that fear of the fun tax, as I've heard it called. And sometimes the things we have to do are not fun, but we still get taxed for them. So this is where I want to say two things. The first thing, in terms of building confidence, we build confidence by overcoming challenge. There's a challenge, we face the challenge, we overcome the challenge, and then we get a little bit of something embedded in our nervous system, which helps us believe more in ourselves because we were able to overcome the challenge. And so anybody who's ever faced any challenges will know that there's a little bit of fear and there's a little bit of apprehension. So it's normal to feel fear, and it's normal to feel apprehension about taking on new things. What isn't normal is for that fear to feel excessively dysregulating, excessively anxiety causing, and cause you to become in a state where you're overwhelmed and you've completely lost connection with yourself. So if anything or whatever we're facing makes you feel that way, if the challenge of going back to work, of family stuff, of relationship stuff, starts to feel too much, too fear-inducing, too overwhelming, that challenge is probably too big for you right now. Or there's some more work that you want to do on your nervous system to hold the intensity of facing that challenge. But let's just go with the example of the challenge is too big. In somatic experiencing, we use the principle of titration. And titration means that we just start with very, very teeny tiny amounts. So let's just say somebody went through a traumatic experience, and I'll just say this is like an acute experience, not a chronic experience. So someone was in a car accident. Let's use that example. I wouldn't necessarily go in and say, tell me about the most intense part of that whole car accident experience. I would start on the edges and I would say, oh, what were you doing that day? What was the first moment that you noticed that something wasn't quite right? So we start on the very edge of the experience with the tiniest amount, that first little drop of activation in the system. And then we work through that little piece and the person overcomes that piece. And then we move closer and closer and closer to what we would call the center of the trauma vortex, or T0. There's this idea of we start with small, achievable challenges, and then as confidence grows and builds, we get into more challenging challenges because the capacity of the system is changing over time. So coming back to this question about building confidence to get back into life, really apply the principles of titration. Don't go for the biggest challenge. I'm going to go back to work full time, you know, when you've been completely off work for 3 years. It might be, I'm going to do a few hours one day a week. And then gradually, you know, you can titrate the experience. Okay, now it's a few hours twice a week. Now it's a few hours three times a week. Now I'm going back to full time 3 days a week, and so on and so on. You're building that all back in again. Or when you're starting to socialize, it's like, I can meet you for tea for half an hour. Can you come to my house? Because I don't have the energy to leave the house. But then over time, it's like, okay, I can come out and meet you for tea because I'd appreciate the change of scenery. Okay, now we could probably do 45 minutes. Now we could probably do an hour. Now we could have a proper lunch date. So it's a gradual titration back into life. And alongside this, we also want to become aware of our energy bucket. And so we're thinking about, you know, we've got this bucket of energy, we've got a capacity for so many things, and we need to be mindful of all the things that are going into our energy bucket each day. So it might be a lot to, you know, go back to work, start seeing more friends, increase your family responsibilities all at the same time. But you might want to go back to work and then keep everything else the same, because life is also going to throw unexpected challenges as well. And then when work feels a little bit more stable, then we're going to socialize a little bit more because you want to enrich that part of your life. And then when you've got a good balance between your work and your socialization, then maybe you decide you're going to get a dog and you need to walk the dog. So that's like another thing that you take on board. So like with when we work on building our exercise capacity, we do a little bit more and then we stabilize. And we do a little bit more and then we stabilize. And we can apply that in the bigger context in terms of life. We go through a transition, going back to work, and then we stabilize for a bit. And then maybe you're going to start dating. So you start getting on some dating apps and then you stabilize for a bit. Or maybe you go for a few coffee dates and then you stabilize for a bit. So everything we want to do, we want to find this balance of transition and change and action, restabilize the system. Transition, change, action, restabilize the system. Often we think we need to have this continuous momentum. It's like one thing, then the next thing, then the next thing, the next thing. It's like more, 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 more. And we have to be really mindful of where that sense of urgency is coming from, what belief systems are driving that need to add in more and more and more, and really continue to ground back into our bodies and really listen to the bodies so we can get a sense of when is the time for more, when is the time for stability, and maybe even when is the time for less. And that kind of slides very nicely into the final piece, which is learning not to go back to the old life and live at a slower pace. So I'll start here and just give you a very honest answer. If anybody knows the solution to this, let me know, because I don't. But I can share some musings and I can share some thoughts. You know, I always thought as my capacity would grow, I was like, I'll never do those things again. But as your capacity grows, it's amazing how easy it is to go back into some of our old habits. I think one of my habits, I'd say two of my habits, would be overworking. Definitely when you run your own business, even with the best intentions not to overwork, inevitably you end up overworking because there's a client in distress, they need to move their appointment earlier, you feel bad, you offer them a slot when it's actually compromising your downtime, or your means your day is more pressured, and now all of a sudden you're overworking. Or you think that you cleared all your emails and you can log off for the day and then someone sends you an email. Or there's something that's broken on the website or something's not working or one of your staff members needs something. And so there's, you know, there's obviously things in life that we can't control, and it's very easy for these things to sort of become a runaway train. So that's the first pattern that I have, is definitely like a workaholic overworking pattern, which is also driven by this need to make sure everyone in my life is okay, including my clients. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is probably also overtraining, which I do not push my body nearly as hard as what I used to pre-chronic fatigue syndrome, but I still do have a tendency to have that achiever, more, 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 train harder mentality, which I'm actually getting a lot better at managing. So that is one that is definitely, I have seen progress. And so here, what I would say is that the biggest thing that's going to help you on this journey is the recalibration of your nervous system. So when we want to go fast and do lots and there's this urgency, or there's the people pleasing, or the fixing tendencies, or, you know, wanting to take care of everyone, a lot of those things are happening because there are patterns that our nervous system has learned to feel safe. And part of unlearning some of these patterns and behaviors is through training the nervous system to have more opportunities to find safety in a different way. So although I haven't necessarily mastered some of these patterns, which I know I have, they are definitely a lot better than what they used to be. And I honestly put that down to all the work that I have done on my nervous system. In addition to that, what I would also say is that through the work I've done on my nervous system, which is somatic based, there is this very, very strong connection to my body that I have built. And whereas before there would have been so much going on in my body, but I would have been disconnected and numb to the signals, now I am so much more attuned to the signals. So I can feel the no in my body. I can feel the stop in my body. And it doesn't need to get so loud and be screaming at me before I can respond. The no, now I can sense the no where it was, 10% of what it once needed to be before I would acknowledge it. There's a sensitivity, there's a much greater sensitivity to what I'm experiencing. And because of that sensitivity to what I'm experiencing, I can be more responsive. So I can feel when my body is getting too stressed and I can sign off work for the day and just say the rest has to get done tomorrow. Or I can be kinder and more gentle with myself when I notice that I'm starting to feel a sense of urgency around exercise. And I can think, oh, what is this really about? Are there any emotions that you're trying to push away with exercise? That type of thing. So there is the long-term change and recalibration of the nervous system that needs to happen. But through that as well, there's also an attunement that happens as well. So we can be more responsive to the signals. And then that responsiveness to the signals acts as our own braking system. So we don't have to continuously go to the edges and beyond before we pull ourselves back in. There's also something that I've spoken about on the podcast before, which is this concept of identity. And I say to achieve something you've never achieved before, you need to become someone you've never been. And that means there needs to be an identity shift that takes place. And that identity shift is actually happening on a nervous system level. Because when the nervous system changes, then what we believe changes, how we relate to others changes, how we meet our needs changes, our values can potentially change as well. Everything else that I've spoken about on this episode changes as the nervous system changes. So a lot of this idea of integrating back into life through our fatigue recovery journey, it happens. The integration is actually part of the healing, and it's happening on a nervous system level. Some of it is going to be conscious, some of it is going to be unconscious, but hopefully some of the things that I've shared today will help you see how you can consciously begin to create some of these shifts. So just recapping from the very beginning now, we talked about living life while recovering. And the invitation there was to explore your connection with your life force and notice the things in your life where there is life force flowing and lean into those. In terms of living normally with fatigue, it's about connecting to your needs, your values, your passion, and your purpose, and what really matters to you, allowing space for grief and allowing acceptance for your limitations. And that acceptance comes in an embodied way on a nervous system level. When we talked about managing others' expectations and relating to others, ultimately this is a concept of boundaries. And in order to have a boundary, we need to feel the boundary. And to state a boundary or to create a boundary, we also need to have the energy in our system, our fight responses, and we need to be attuned to those. We also have to overcome some of the relational dynamics of fear of setting boundaries. And then in terms of confidence and building, confidence building, getting back into life, you want to think of the energy bucket and titrating and sort of feeling how these changes are impacting the nervous system. And then when we're more attuned to how these changes impact the nervous system, then that's what acts as the braking. When we start to go too fast or do too much, and we can start to feel more at ease with a slower pace. So bottom line is really just get to know you, that's the journey of healing. Connect to your needs, connect to your body, connect to your sensations, connect to your emotions, have a toolbox that allows you to work with all of these things. And that is kind of the toolbox that we cover in the Nurturing Resilience program, which is available if you want to buy the self-study option. But other than that, just take whatever you need from this episode, write some notes, do some journaling, use it as an opportunity to reflect. And remember, the goal is not to change every single one of the things I've talked about at once, because that would be far too much for you to do. It's much more about, can you take one thing from this episode that would help to create a meaningful shift for you over the next few weeks and months, and just keep on working at that thing until it becomes part of your routine, part of your identity, part of who you are. And then once that's in place, come back, do the next thing. And then slowly over time, we put one step in front of the other and we move towards healing. So I hope you have enjoyed this episode today. Thank you to Jo, who was the woman who suggested the topic, and also Ellie, who gave me some additional questions, which I weaved in. Wishing you both a wonderful fatigue recovery day, and see you all in the next episode.